This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Pop, welcome to another edition of the Sellers Points Podcast. I am, of course, your illustrious host, Russell Sellers. And joining me, as always, on this wonderful adventure is your favorite ginger bear and mine, who's been living in much sweatier conditions lately, Mr. Kelly Poole. How you doing tonight, Kelly?
A lot better. Was without AC for an entire week, and if you live in the South, especially in Satan's asshole, which is Alabama, a week without AC is bad.
And even though it's the beginning of the summer, it doesn't matter. It still sucks down here.
When you walk in your house from a long day at work, and it's the same temperature that you just came from, and it's like, well, fuck. Yay, this is what I've got to look for the rest of the evening. So, yeah, it's, you know, take care of your air conditioners. I mean, they you know, I learned a valuable lesson about keeping the unit clean, which I sort of knew, but I'd kind of gotten lax in my cleaning duties. So that's not going to happen again. My unit is going to be, you know, maintained a lot better now that I've had this happen. And yeah, just a week down here in the South without an AC sucks.
Well, not to make any promises or anything, but that probably won't be the last reference to Kelly's unit throughout this show.
So I
walked into that one, buddy. I had to take it.
God damn it.
I don't mean to bust your balls. I'm going to let your tenants, your roommates, do that. Because there's a good chance that Kelly's been walking around naked the last week. So, you know, poor those guys. But anyway, this is going to be our last show for Wonder Woman month. We're going to be wrapping it up with a look at a movie that a lot of people didn't see whenever it came out. And that's fitting because this is, again, another edition of The Mist and the Maligned. So what we do, for those of you who have never listened to one of these before, we take a look at a comic book story, property, or maybe even a movie that people either didn't really see or is universal, you know, kind of hated for one reason or another, and or maybe both. Could be both. In this particular case, I think it's just missed. I think most people who've seen this this particular film really enjoyed it. And that is, of course, the 2009 animated Wonder Woman film. It was a DC animated universe movie directed by longtime DC animation producer Lauren Montgomery. And starring some pretty big name voice talents, honestly, and we're gonna do a little compare and contrast of this and the live action movie. But before we get to that, I got to introduce our special guest. Joining us once again on the Sellers Points podcast is our good friend from Geek and Sassy, Miss Jennifer Smith. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. I got my Wonder Woman pajamas on, so I'm all set. Talk about this movie.
Well, that's fitting. Kelly's not wearing anything. So
that's not true. Oh, God.
He has his Superman underoos on. Come on.
Yeah, I can't see him here in the studio, but you know, we have a V-shaped studio, which is kind of fitting. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Not to rip off the hard-traveling fanboys. I mean, they had the L-shaped studio. We had the V-shaped studio here, so you know. We're on opposite points of that one, but I just assume because Kelly's been without AC for so long. And mm-hmm. Jennifer, you also live in the South, so you know what it's like to suffer without air conditioning in the summertime here, I assume.
Luckily, it's been a long time, but yeah, I mean, that's happened once or twice, and I feel for you, buddy.
It is certainly Satan's asshole seems like an apt description, so we'll go with that. And
agreed.
But let's get into what we're here to talk about, which is the Wonder Woman animated movie. Now, I of course have loved this movie since it came out. I bought it in 2009 on its release date because I'm a big DC mark, as most of you probably have figured out by now. And I watch all of these movies. Without even seeing them first, like, I will buy these movies when they come out, and I will judge them after that. But it's all part of just having them in the collection. Now, I know my feelings on it, but I want to start with Kelly. Had you seen this movie before we came together for this show to talk about it?
No, I hadn't. I mean, I've watched it. I just hadn't watched it recently. But, I mean, it is one that I have in my collection. Okay,
So you had seen it and
yes.
aware of its existence, even though it's mm-hmm. – surprisingly, it is still to this day the lowest-selling DC Animated Universe movie ever. And that is a travesty because it's actually one of the best, if not the best, of the DC mm-hmm. Animated Universe films. Now, Jenny, had you seen this movie before we invited you on to be part of this show?
I've only seen it one other time, and I was trying to pinpoint when it was. I'm uncertain. I want to say it was at the end of last year, maybe October, November of last year. But I remember watching it and loving it then. And then, of course, I watched it again today and still was great.
Yeah, it's one that holds up remarkably well. So the first thing I want to ask you guys about, though, is that each of these DC Animated Universe movies, they tend to use different animation houses, different animators for especially for these early films. But I want to ask, what did each of you think of the animation style they used for this movie? And Jenny, I want to start with you on that one.
This one is kind of mixed for me. I generally overall really like the animation style, particularly in the opening sequence. This really awesome badass fight scene between Ares and the Amazonians, and there are several standout animated scenes in there. But my critiques come with some of the character designs. So I don't know how you want to – if you want to put that under animation style or not. I prefer sure. Diana with like long flowing curly hair and maybe a more curvaceous body style. Diana in this one is pretty slim. I mean, she's muscular, but she's not overly curvy or you know, some depictions of Diana have her with like really muscly arms and legs, and I tend to like her that way. She seems sort of more slender, and then she has like the long, sort of straight hair. I mean, it looks good. It's just not my preference for her, and I think a lot of that comes from my love of Liam Sharp's work of her and the way he draws her hair. And that's the way I like my Diana to look, and instead of this like sleek look that she has in this movie.
Well, we will be sure to let Liam know that you prefer his design.
please do.
Good friend of the show. And he was great on our previous episode. If you guys haven't listened to that one, after you finish listening to this, go do that, because it was a hell of a fun time talking with Liam about his recent Wonder Woman run. Now, Kelly, same question. How are you digging on the animation style of this 2009 film?
I liked it pretty much. I guess I'm kind of neutral when it comes to, I mean, as far as this style of animation, it was there's not, I mean, as far as seeing Wonder Woman animated, there's not a whole lot of things to compare it to. But I think I'd like, if I had to give any critiques, I think I kind of agree with Jenny or Jennifer, that the whole look of her would have been better if it was more of a, as you put it, curvaceous style, that she had more of a kind of bold look. This look for her was almost just like very slim, very just, almost just kind of like a board, straight, not, you know, just not the kind of look that, you know, if I had a preference. I mean, it's not horrible, it's not bad, but, you know.
I guess the only thing I don't dig about this particular version of Diana's look is the way her hair is designed. It seems really big and almost like a hood, almost like it's a hoodie going over her face. And I'm like, you know, mm-hmm. that could have been tucked back a little bit. Mm-hmm. And she does otherwise kind of blend in with a lot of other characters. Like, she doesn't necessarily stand, like Diana was one that was supposed to like really stand out even among the Amazons. And honestly, she could easily blend in with them. And if she wasn't identified by name, it'd almost be kind of hard to pick her out. So that might be the main critique I have of the animation style. Otherwise, it all moves very fluidly. I never feel like the animators were half-assing it at any point. And even whenever they use computer graphics to enhance some of the imagery, it never feels like it's really out of place. It's one of those movies where they did seem to blend traditional animation style with CGI in a way that feels really like pretty close to seamless. There are only like a couple of times whenever you can really tell that it's CG, like the invisible jet, which actually makes an appearance in this movie. Mm-hmm. You can kind of tell that's a computer generated image. You know that somebody didn't just like sit down and hand draw that for the animation cells. And there are a few backgrounds that are similar to that as well. But I agree with Jenny. That opening fight scene is pretty damn good. But
yeah.
But before we get to that, before we talk any more about individual scenes, we got to ask how the cast works for you guys, because there are some big names in this cast. Some that some folks might not expect to see in an animated film, especially one that's direct to DVD. So, starting with you, Jenny, how'd you like the voice cast? How'd it work for you?
I was actually really impressed with the cast. I like Carrie Russell quite a bit as Wonder Woman. She has sort of a it's not overly feminine voice. She has a like a kind of a deeper pitch to it, and she gets pretty aggressive, and her voice seems to stick with that, you know, with some of the lines that she delivers and some of the moves that she does. And Nathan Fillion is just amazing in everything. There's just no way that he doesn't bring this easy charm to him, especially to somebody like Steve, who has some great one-liners. Across the board, I was really truly impressed with everybody.
Yeah, Nathan Fillion is he's been in some of these other DC animated films as well. Like he was the voice of Hal Jordan in Green Lantern Emerald Knights, which I would also encourage people to go and watch. You can pretty much skip the Green Lantern First Flight movie, though. That wasn't very good. But he wasn't in that. Nathan Fillion as Steve Trevor, though, was really great. Now, Kelly, I think you probably picked up on this, but if you compare the version of Steve Trevor in this movie to the version of Steve Trevor that you see in the live action played by Chris Pine, they felt very similar to me. Did you get that same feeling?
Yeah, I did. I think that there's you know, definitely a similarity between the two, and both, you know, were outstanding as far as portrayal of the character.
The quippiness, I think it's the ability to deliver, good, well-timed one-liners. They mm-hmm. both have a tremendous ability to do that. Of course, the humor is different because this 2009 Wonder Woman movie largely takes place in modern day. And the live-action film takes place during 1918 at the end of World War I. So differences, of course, but a lot of similarities between the portrayal. So this is actually the first movie that I can remember, or maybe one of the first times in any media I can remember thinking the Steve Trevor character was interesting, although he's not given the same type of emotional core that the Chris Pine version is given. He is largely here in this film to be background or to be kind of like just straight sidekick to Diana and to make futile attempts at hitting on her, which are...
and to drink some tequila shots.
Oh, the tequila scene is one of my favorites. Like, just,
I love it.
He sobers up remarkably fast. and the very next scene, he gets sober real quick, just in time to get, you know, tossed around by one of the minions of Ares. Now that's another character that I feel like we should talk about a little bit, because this version of Ares is very different from what you see in the live action movie. And I feel he's more traditional to certain comic book iterations of the character. And I'm just going to put it out there. For me, I think that the version of Ares we get in this animated film is better than the one we got in the live action film. I felt like he was better developed and had more of a reason to do what he's doing than what the version you see in live action. And he's voiced tremendously by Alfred Molina, who people will probably remember as Doc Ock from Spider-Man 2. What did you think of that, Jenny? What did you think about this version of Ares versus the one that you saw in live action?
Well, I had Alfred Molina as a standout cast member in this movie for Ares, because he has this quality to his voice that's both menacing and also smooth and a tad seductive. It really works for his character, and I totally would love to have seen this same setup in the live action film, as far as Ares being defeated by Hippolyta and then condemned by Susan Hera to be imprisoned in Themyscira and basically watched, you know, bound by the cuffs or whatever, and imprisoned by the Amazons to watch over him. I would love to have seen that in the live action, because I felt like that would have given Diana this more motivation to go out and find him the way she did in the animated version.
Yeah, I can get on board with that. I was actually kind of hoping that would have been the case. There was only one thing I worried about in the live action movie, that in Diana's origin, I actually was legit worried that they were going to reveal that Ares was her father or something like that.
Which
I felt like would have been way too on the nose. So I'm glad that wasn't the case. And it's not the case in this movie either. This movie actually takes a very traditional version of Wonder Woman's origin. There's no, there was no New 52 at this time. So the idea of Zeus being, Diana's father had not become a thing. Hippolyta sculpts her from the sand or the clay of the beach, dabs a drop of her own blood onto the forehead, and then Zeus hits it with a bolt of lightning, and Diana is made.
That was a creepy little bit of animation there too. It looked a little disturbing watching that baby form out of the the sand.
A little bit, but as I watched it just the other night, I thought it was actually a really powerful moment.
It
kind of struck me a little bit more this time than it ever had before. I was like, this is a really moving scene. But at the same time, hot take here, I prefer the New 52 version, where Zeus is her father and she's a demigod. I also prefer I prefer the live action film and the current comic book look for Diana with the Greco-Roman battle skirt rather than wearing the traditional starred bloomers that she's running around
bloomers.
In. That's what they are. They're bloomers. That's what they
High-waisted
are.
High-waisted panties is another word, but okay.
You look at these things and you're like, I'm sorry, you're running around in your underwear and it's fine though. I mean, it works. It's a traditional take on Wonder Woman. So if you're into that, this is going to be a movie that works for you. Now, Kelly, we've talked about the characters that kind of stood out for us, and we'll get into the characters that we didn't think were so good in just a second. But which characters did you like the most in this movie, Kelly?
I thought Artemis was really good.
Oh, here, Rosario Dawson. Yes.
Yeah. Hera and Hades were both well. I thought done very well. I think as far as voice talent and stuff like that, I think they really did a great job with Wonder Woman, and I really enjoyed the movie when it came out. I want to say, didn't the Green Lantern come out before this?
I believe so. This was 2009. Actually, it came out the same year.
Same year, yeah. Well, because I remember, thinking to myself, looking over all of the films, how great this film was and how disappointing Green Lantern was to some degree. I just wasn't all that happy with the first animated film, but this one really stood out and has continued to kind of stand out among the animated films that DC has done.
And it's funny you mention Hades, because I'm gonna do a hot take. He's actually the character that I think was probably done not the worst, but he's my second least liked character in this movie, and the reasoning behind it is because, not because the voice actor Oliver Platt actually does a fine voice as the voice of Hades. I just, whenever I first saw him on screen, and it happened again when I watched it again this past weekend, I was like, "What's Dionysus doing here?" Wait a minute, he's Hades. What? I don't recall Hades being that fat and enjoying his grapes quite that much. This isn't the Lord of the Dead that I am accustomed. Not that, I guess he couldn't be portrayed that way, but every Greek myth that I've ever read of Hades certainly doesn't portray him that way. And that is very much the god of wine, as I remember him. So that was just a bit off-putting to me, though.
Oliver Platt was the good choice for him, though, the way that they depicted him, because they look basically the same to me, the way that they animated him. But he reminded me of Hedonism Bot from Futurama.
Yep.
That's basically what he looked like.
That's what it is. It's like, it's not Hades, that's Hedonism Bot.
Hedonism Bot.
This is what he was before we got to the future, and he had to change forms to be robotic. So that's it. It didn't work for me, but I think the character that really didn't work for me this time, and it, after seeing the live action movie, it genuinely bothers me, is the animated version of Etta Candy.
Ooh, yes.
That is so bad in this movie. She's portrayed as the, how do I put this, sexpot secretary of Steve Trevor, who has no real brain power to speak of. She just flaunts her assets to get what she wants. And I'm like, and she hates Diana. Like they clash immediately, as you might, you know, suspect. And as I'm watching it, I'm like, this is terrible. Like, this is like a,
well, Diana says, what is wrong with you?
Yeah. She even says, like, what's wrong with you? Like, why are you not able to do things for yourself? And it's shocking to me that Etta Candy would be written that way in this movie, because this movie is co-written by Gail Simone, who is one of the most prolific Wonder Woman writers of all time. And I cannot believe that she would be involved in a story that treated Etta Candy this way. It is a piss poor interpretation of that character. And it's good she's only in one scene, because if she was in any more of this movie, it would have drug it way down. At least in this version, but they give her no care. Of course, she has no character arc. She's only got that one scene, but it's a terrible one. But luckily from there, the movie refocuses in on Diana and Steve and their quest to stop Ares. Now this is that's my one little criticism. So, Kelly, why is it that you think this one works or doesn't work?
Well, I mean, I think that it the reason I think it works, or at least for me, was that I think that it captured a lot of kind of the spirit of the character, and at least to me, it felt familiar. It wasn't like completely, you know, other than the Etta Candy part. I mean, a lot of the basics were sort of there, and it just, you know, for me, a lot of times I'm pretty easy if they keep the basics. And I've said this, I think, over just about every kind of comic book where you take it from the book media to some other media. If they keep the basics, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be entertained. Now, to whatever level, it depends on how well they translate the material. And you know, like I said, going back to the Green Lantern animated, you know, to me, like I said, that was not that great. There were things about it that I personally didn't really care much for. I thought the next one they did was a lot better, and to me was superior as far as the two side by side. I would have liked to have seen another Wonder Woman, but I guess because of the low sales or it not being as popular for some reason, it didn't get a sequel. But I would have loved to have seen one. Now, we may see one now that the Wonder Woman film has kicked every other film in the junk. So, yeah. You know, Nita Nazi threw a window, you know, in the junk or whatever, because, you know.
Well, World War One, so they were Huns, not Nazis.
Huns, but, Huns.
But yeah, they were based around Germany and United Powers there. But anyway, I'm going to echo that. I hope that we do get a. If we're not going to get a sequel to this movie, which does seem unlikely after all these years, there should be another solo Wonder Woman movie, like another solo animated Wonder Woman film, based maybe in the interconnected DC animated universe films they've been doing lately, because there have been some really good ones there. And oddly enough, Rosario Dawson, who voiced Artemis in this movie, is now the voice of Wonder Woman in those interconnected films. So I would love to see her get her own solo film, maybe based on the Brian Azzarello run, or maybe, hell, let's base it on the Greg Rucka and Liam Sharp stuff.
Yes, please.
I think that would be tremendous. I think you could absolutely make something great out of their story. But I digress. Jenny, why do you think this movie works or doesn't work?
I think it definitely works. From the origin story, Diana, something to me that was different in between the animated version and the live action is in the animated version, she actually fights Steve after he crashes on the island.
Which
and
is a cool scene, by the way.
It is cool. It is really cool. I like that, having that, because she just goes into warrior mode, you know, instead of like rescuing mode, and just automatically starts fighting with him. From that to the scene in the, oh my gosh, my brain just went away. The stadium where they were doing all of the trials to see who gets to go off with Steve. Yeah. Gosh,
great.
Get it together, Smith.
Great section there that I actually really hate that we didn't see in live action.
Yeah, yeah. Even though it bothered me a little bit because I was kind of nitpicking it, because they had this huge stadium and it looked like it was filled with just like thousands and thousands of people. And I'm like, are there that many people on Themyscira?
Yes.
I don't know. There are?
and in different interpretations, Themyscira has been known to be anywhere from just a couple hundred people all the way up to like thousands. You know, it depends on, you know, who's writing it. But in this case, I guess they went more of the thousands of Amazons left on Themyscira, which I'm largely fine with. But that's one of the things that I think this animated film does better than the live action movie, is it gets you into that part of the Amazon culture.
Right.
Like, you see a good bit of Amazon culture in the live action movie, don't get me wrong, but that part of it, the part where they determine who's going to take Steve Trevor back to the world of men.
Yes.
That is so freaking awesome in this movie. And mm-hmm. we saw, like, you see in the new movie, you see all this like cool Amazon action at the beginning mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. the training montage, or like just the little bit of training sequences. And I'm like, I want to see competition.
Exactly.
And
I love that part of the animated movie. And then, we haven't really mentioned it much, but it really stuck out to me, the score, especially
yes.
in the beginning. It was epic. It just like booming. And then, I mean, it just amped up all the tension in all of the fight scenes. And then in the quieter moments, it really kind of made it more intimate. But between those things and the voice performances, the animation, the plot, everything. I mean, the whole movie, it really just, it works as a great origin and a jumping off point for the character.
Yep. The music that they conduct, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is something that struck me this last time I watched it, was just how good the score is in this movie. I mean, it's not, you know, that fist pumping iconic Wonder Woman music that you are inevitably going to hear in this podcast if you haven't already. You know, because that's awesome. That is just a great piece of music that that Junkie XL put together. But there's the people that conducted the music for this film, they just knocked it out of the park for me. Like, it's one of the best. So I guess for me, I guess you guys know this movie definitely works for me. I think it was one of the more well-constructed animated films from the DC Animated Universe, and it does a lot in its 74-minute runtime, which is really amazing, because you don't know, you know, how much you can actually fit into that short amount of space, and there's only so much time you get for these animated movies. Now we've kind of hinted at it a little bit as we've gone along, but why do you guys think this wasn't a bigger hit in 2009? Why didn't more people jump onto this one? Kelly, what do you think kept people away?
You know, it's, I don't know. It's kind of a perplexing, you know, situation for most of the DC animated. Well, I think most, I would say a good portion of all the DC animated films have been pretty well received. They've always been stronger than, say, you know, the Marvel animated side.
Certainly.
DC seems to really, you know, was it Andrea Thompson, who is the, like, she does all the voice. She gets the people, the voice actors. She's really good. She's been involved with a lot of their projects. I guess it may have just, you know, it could boil down to maybe there wasn't enough, maybe Wonder Woman fans to, maybe they felt the same way. Maybe there wasn't enough of them that really enjoyed it, or, I mean, I don't know. Because I enjoyed it when it came out. I thought it was pretty good. So, you know, I think maybe some of the fans didn't, embrace it. And maybe, you know, that was the I'm just guessing. And maybe that was the cause of the low sales. Maybe people didn't want to, you know, go out and buy it. So.
I think there's something to that. Andrea Romano was the casting director.
No, Romano, not Thompson.
Andrea Romano did do the voice casting for this one, as she does a lot, pretty much all of the DC animated.
All of them, yeah.
She's involved in all that. She's actually in the movie as well, in a very small role. She's the advisor to the president, which is a tiny, tiny role in this movie. But this movie was also produced by Bruce Timm. And some of the animation style fits in with stuff that he's done before. So that's another reason that it just perplexes me that this movie wasn't a bigger hit, especially since it is easily, at that time, I think it was easily the best animated film they had done.
Yeah.
It hits all the right beats. It's very traditional Wonder Woman, and it has some just kick-ass action scenes. And it's one of the few movies that, you know, for people that have issues with third act action scenes, this is one that's actually got one of the better ones. When it's Diana versus Ares hand-to-hand in Washington, D.C., not only that, but the hordes of the undead that Ares summons, and then all of a sudden, and this like big freaking heroic moment, all the Amazons like sail into Washington, D.C., sailing up the Potomac and landing at the Capitol to join Diana in this big fight. Man, if you tried to do this on a live action screen, there would be so much destruction happening. But they keep it relatively contained. It's just the Capitol building that seems to suffer here. They're fighting right around the Capitol building and the Washington Monument. Well, the White House endures a good bit of damage here, too. Not that anybody be complaining about that right now. but, yeah, this definitely would have been, like, far more, like, destructive if you'd seen it in live action. But it's a badass fight scene, and it culminates, you know, it's really a culmination of Ares' whole mission. He's expressly saying what he's been trying to do this whole time, and you actually see it come to fruition here. And on top of that, he isn't content just to get what he wants. He wants to hit his enemies where it hurts. He wants to attack their hearts as much as he wants to hurt them physically. So he makes them fight their dead sisters. And it's a... It's a pretty intense action scene all the way around. But that's another reason that it blows my mind that this movie didn't hit bigger. But Jenny, I want to get your perspective. Why do you think this movie didn't hit bigger?
Well, it's not really a problem for me, but I think that if you're wanting to get kids to watch these animated movies, which honestly, I don't really know if that's their market when they make these movies. Are they trying to get kids to watch them?
I don't think so.
Well, that's good, because possibly the violence, which I have zero problem with, but, you know, there was quite a bit of beheading, disemboweling, quite a bit of straight up violence that I love, but maybe would turn off some people if they were trying to show this to their daughters, for instance, you know, because... Back then, maybe there wasn't as much content for girls, and maybe they thought, well, here's a Wonder Woman animated movie, and then they put it on and it was bloody. Yeah.
And it's surprisingly, you know, when heads are coming off, there's no blood on right? these blades. There's no blood anywhere, really, except for like this one or like one or two scenes you see a little bit of it. But no,
stabby. There's a lot of stabby.
There is that. But I mean, they're using bladed weapons throughout. So mm-hmm. bladed weapons and bows and arrows. Yes, people going to get stabbed.
But honestly, I wasn't really, I'm trying to think of maybe a reason why I didn't watch it back then. Maybe I just didn't know about it. I mean, was it marketed well? Was it promoted?
That is a valid criticism of Warner Brothers Animation back in the day. And I think it's still a valid criticism of the animation house, or at least the people that give them money for marketing purposes, because they really don't market these movies all that well. The direct-to-video market is actually pretty huge, and you would think it would be a bigger deal for them because they can make a lot of money off these things. They are expensive to produce in a manner of speaking, but still cheaper than producing a live action movie. That's
right.
A movie that's costing you, say, $150 million to produce, like the live action Wonder Woman did. And that's not even counting their marketing budget. That's just production. So I don't see why they couldn't, you know, start pushing these animated movies better. Or maybe when that new DC streaming service gets all kicked off next year, they'll have a streaming home for all these new ones.
That would be awesome.
It really would be. I think that would be a tremendous way to get these movies in more people's hands faster, is by making that the streaming home of all of your animated films from the past and going forward. It makes too much sense for them to actually do it, so it probably won't happen.
Well, I mean, like, even before I started reading comic books, my ass was in the seat if a comic book movie was coming out. I mean, I watched everything, and, you know, if I had known about this, I'm sure I would have watched it back then. But
yeah, it's true, and, like, you are a special case. The movies got you into comics, which is actually a rare thing to happen in this world. And we are not complaining about that. We would like to see more of that happen. It's just weird that it doesn't. And that's another reason that I like these animated films. I like these animated movies to get more people interested, and to maybe go for a younger audience, or just to go for people that might not necessarily go to the movies. Going to the movies is expensive. Mm-hmm. Getting these animated mm-hmm. movies shouldn't be. They should be readily available to you. But anyway, let's talk last thing before we go to break. What would you guys like to have seen if this movie had a direct sequel? And they do tease a little bit about what a sequel might have had in it at the very end of this one, but what is it that you would want to see? So, Kelly, what would you want to see in a Wonder Woman sequel?
I think that if they did, a sequel, I guess, for a Wonder Woman animated film. I don't know. I kind of like when we were talking, when you were saying earlier about things you'd like to see, I wouldn't mind seeing something like what we've seen recently in the Wonder Woman comic, dealing with Cheetah and that whole, you know, something like that, maybe.
That is a good idea, especially if they went with that version of Cheetah. I particularly enjoy watching that, or like reading that take on Cheetah. That version of Barbara Ann Minerva would be absolutely tremendous. But Jenny, what do you think you'd like to see?
Well, you know, at the end of the movie, they had Cheetah actually in that scene, and to me, I think it's pretty obvious. I think an animated Cheetah would be awesome. You could give her a really distinct look and give her a really great voice actor and turn it into a a fight for the ages.
I agree. And in addition to Cheetah, I would like to take that Greg Rucka idea further. Like if we're going to do like, or if they were going to do his version of Barbara Ann Minerva on, in an animated film, I would also like to see his version of Veronica Kale, who has been made into a tremendous villain for Wonder Woman in the comics right now. She is the head of the God Watch organization. And, of course, in the comics, she's on a mission to find Themyscira, but for very different reasons from what Diana is looking for it. But that's those are the two characters that I think would absolutely hit big in a sequel to this movie. But if they didn't do Veronica Kale, it might have also made sense to go for someone like Cersei, who is also one of Wonder Woman's biggest villains. And that would have brought in a huge magical element to the story that, while present in this one, isn't all that heavy. But it would have been the – if you put Cersei in there, it's going to be the main focus of the story because it kind of has to be. She's a super powerful villain and I think would be – might even be an interesting character to use in the live-action Wonder Woman sequel, which I think we all know is inevitable at this point. And it certainly should be. So, with that, we've reached the end of the first half. We've talked about our favorite parts of this 2009 animated Wonder Woman movie. We hope you guys will go and check that out. It's available on Amazon. I don't know that it's streaming anywhere. I don't think it is. But this one's worth a buy. And lucky for you, there is a new commemorative version that has been re-released thanks to the popularity of the live-action movie. So there is a brand new Blu-ray edition of this movie out there right now. And if I didn't already own the Blu-ray copy, I would go and spend my money to get that. So I'm going to recommend that you go out, spend your money on this. It is well worth your time. And I think especially if you've already seen the live-action movie, you'll watch this and probably think, wow, that is really awesome. And I need to go get me some Wonder Woman comics, which is also worth your time to do. And with that, we're going to take a short break and we're going to come back and I'm not going to talk very much in the next half because Jenny and Kelly are going to tell you what they thought of the recent live action Wonder Woman movie. I've already reviewed it here on Place to Be Nation. You can find my print review on the main site. Go check that out. But these two are going to tell you all about their thoughts when we come back. Stay right there.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Clotheslines and Headlines, Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, and we leave wrestling's past with a monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. all these shows, plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apuestas podcast, The Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back. We are here talking about, well, in our first half we talked about the 2009 animated Wonder Woman film as part of a episode of The Mist and the Maligned, and now we are going to talk about the live action Wonder Woman movie. Now, of course, I've already given my review of it right here on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Plug. And
shameless.
I am. I have no shame whatsoever. I can't deny that. So, with that though, I'm going to turn it over to you two. I'm just going to kind of play guide through this and ask you guys a few questions. Because the people at home want to know, what did Kelly and Jenny think of the live action Wonder Woman movie? Now, of course, I know that you've both gushed about it a good bit on social media, but let's get specific. Now, Kelly, I'll start with you on this one. What kind of expectations did you have going into this this new version of Wonder Woman that was directed by Patty Jenkins and starring Gal Gadot?
I think we talked about this months and months ago. We were giving our predictions about, like, the movies coming out for this year, and I think Logan and Wonder Woman were being tossed around. And I know that I said, or at least I think that I said, that I really felt Logan was going to be a big film, that it was going to be, you know, and Wonder Woman I was hoping would be a good film. Going into seeing Wonder Woman, like with Logan, I just had this gut feeling like it was just gonna, you know, kick me hard, and Wonder Woman came in and did it better to an extent. I mean, I think both films are good, but I had to give the top spot when I put my little opinion on my Facebook page a few weeks ago about Wonder Woman being like the best superhero film that I think I've ever seen so far. And my reasons behind it were just that the fact that it gave me such a sense of nostalgia to some degree. It, you know, the way, it made me think when made me remember sitting, with my mom and dad watching Linda Carter, and seeing, because she was on for 3 seasons and she was a superhero when she was on TV, and that was a kind of a new thing, and it you know, you didn't see that a lot, and seeing a powerful woman too, you didn't see that, and I was just thoroughly happy to see a powerful female character that wasn't dumb, that wasn't, the story was well done. Gail is fantastic. Gail Gadot is Wonder Woman to me now. She's just like the way Linda Carter is. She's always going to be etched in my mind as Wonder Woman. And she's just a generally, I've seen a lot of interviews with her she just seems to be a very genuinely nice person and really doesn't take herself too seriously. But in the film, she just really, they didn't go overboard with her being completely naive on all things, and that it wasn't just like, Steve had to do a lot of hand holding, because, hand holding is when you're together. So I just felt that the film just really, it hit me and just really, made a good impact. And I was sitting there going, God, I think this is the best superhero film that I've ever seen. And this was like towards the end. And, I think it was close to the scene where, Steve's got the plane and he's flying it up and he looks back, he pulls his gun out and he looks, and you just see like this whole, just his demeanor just changes, and he points the gun because I didn't really think, I said, he's just going to fly the plane off and get it away, maybe land it someplace or whatever. I really didn't think
I didn't
pull
either.
The gun out, and I literally was just like, holy crap. And then he hesitates and I'm like, no, maybe he's not. And then he does it. And then, she loses her shit and she puts Ares in his place. And I don't know. I just, the film to me just really, it's the best. And rightly so, the whole time, I think the first things I said when we were walking out, and I'd gone with my friend Blake, and we walked out the doors of the theater, and I said, "Yeah, suck it, Marvel." I just like, what? Marvel and all of the Denzins and all the fanboys were just giving DC so much shit. I was like, eat that. You have nothing to say about that film. That film kicked so much ass. And you know what? They did a female lead superhero before Marvel, and you're not going to be able to touch it. I just was so, because I don't want to have this whole Marvel versus DC thing, but I get so irritated with all the Marvel fans just thinking everything that Marvel shits out is gold. And, DC has done just a shitty, they just had a rough time at it. They're not trying to follow their mold, so. Mm-hmm.
It has been an interesting go of it for the old DCEU, and this is certainly a sharp turn in the right direction. And we'll see how it continues with Justice League later this year. But I had a pretty strong reaction coming out of the movie as well. Like, this was tremendous stuff. Now, but back to the original question, Jenny. What kind of expectations did you have going in? Like, where would you say your expectations were as you were heading into the movie?
I think it's no secret that it was a 10, a fucking 10. And I woke up that morning on Wonder Woman Day and my eyes popped open and I said, it's Wonder Woman Day. I was bouncing in my seat the entire time waiting for the movie to start. The commercials were endless, and then I just grinned the entire time I watched the movie.
I can vouch for that. She was sitting in front of me. I could see her bouncing.
Fantastic. I mean, like, hilarious, And honestly, I didn't cry, which I was surprised that I did not cry. But
and there are quite a few moments you'll tear up in this movie.
Yeah. I think I was just too excited to, because the main reason for me is Gal Gadot. She has this beautiful quality to her. Not even her face or her body. It's just this inner beauty that just glows. She looks effortless in everything that she does. Her origin, her training, her finding Steve on the beach, everything that she did was so genuine and real, and she was Wonder Woman.
That's what you want.
It was phenomenal. It was breathtaking. I knew I was going to love it. Like, I had no doubts. Some people were doubtful because of things like, I guess, Batman v Superman, which I loved, but anyway, and then Suicide Squad, which I did not, but anyway, no, I didn't take any of that baggage with me because I knew that this was going to be awesome. I just did. And it did not disappoint me at all. And then when I came out of the theater, I was still bouncing around and super excited.
Also true.
Yes. I felt like I was just going to just beaming with happiness because it's not just a female thing. I think it's just it's a feeling like finally somebody like Patty Jenkins can take this, and you can tell it's made with so much love and just reverence, but also, you know, not pulling any punches, being real and genuine in every scene. With the humor and the emotion and the action, she kicked so much ass. Mm-hmm. Just believably. I mean, none of it looked like she tried to do any of it. It looked like she just naturally did it all. And she just sold it in every possible way.
I'm right there with you, with both of you guys. They nailed this movie in exactly the way they needed to. And I won't go where Kelly went and say, you know, somebody does deserve to be told to suck it for this, but it's not. But I'm going to say it's not the Marvel fanboys. No, it's the people or the person who put out that open letter, that supposed open letter to Kevin Tijahara that claimed Wonder Woman was a discombobulated mess, and the people who perpetuated that by repeating it over and over and over again as if it were fact. Because now that the movie has come out and we can see that none of that was true, stop giving these people a platform to speak. when you see this stuff come out, and I mean, they should have known then too, because the movie had barely started like filming. The movie was barely like in its production point. There was no... there were no scenes finalized. There was nothing that, you know, there wasn't enough material there to say it was discombobulated mess or not. But this person is putting that out there and also saying the same thing about Justice League, which was even further back in its production point at that time. It's like, come on, folks. Y'all know better than this. Some of y'all sites probably don't know better than that. Some of y'all are just like clickbait. But but I saw this shit pop up on Collider. Yeah, I'm calling y'all out because Collider, you got some good programming. You do. I watch it just about every day, and I'm thinking, you know what? You guys got some good insight. You guys are smart people. How the fuck did you fall for this? Because they're the ones that helped to perpetuate it and legitimize that rumor to be more than it actually was. And I'm sitting over here like, y'all believed that because you said it came from the same source that told you Batman v Superman was a mess. And I'm like, nah, didn't. It came from fucking Reddit. And if that's your source, stop. Mm. Take a step back. Fuck your own face. And then learn. Do better. Because this is how... I mean, I hate to say it this way, but it's true. We live in a world now where people will make up their minds about a movie long before it ever comes out. And they will base this on information that they're getting that they believe to be true. And a lot of that information that seems to be coming out is complete bullshit. And this Wonder Woman kind of proves that some of these folks really shouldn't be trusted with any of this information. Like, don't trust anything coming out from some of these people. A lot of it's just like clickbait and bullshit. Like, if you don't like the look of a trailer, if you think a movie trailer just isn't doing it for you, that might be a better indicator of whether or not a movie's going to be good. Mm-hmm. But then again, sometimes I've seen good trailers for terrible movies too. And I've seen horrible trailers for movies that were really good. Case in point, Iron Man. The first Iron Man movie, I was not filled with confidence that that movie was going to be good going into it because its trailers are pretty terrible. Like, go back and watch them again and you'll see some just not well thought out movie trailers. It's amazing that people went to see that movie at all, but word of mouth helps.
I'm just going to say it. A lot of it to me feels just straight up sexist. I mean, girls, nobody wants to watch a woman superhero. Girls aren't going to go to the theater to watch, you know, a girl superhero. I just feel like a
wrong
lot of
that
it,
one.
Yeah. I just feel like, eat it because obviously everybody did.
That's more appropriate. What I saw coming out of Wonder Woman, I think this is very telling. We went in with one of our friends who went with us, Mr. Nick Duke from the Hard Traveling Fanboys. He's told this story on their show, but I'll tell it here. His wife, Danielle, went to see the movie with us, as she tends to go to all these superhero movies with us if we're seeing them together as the larger group. And generally seems to enjoy them well enough. But, you know, isn't like, you know, fanboying out like the rest of us are. And when we came out of Wonder Woman, we were all excited about the movie, but I don't know that anybody was more excited about it than her. Because she was already negotiating with Nick to keep their girls at some point during the week so she could bring her mom to see it. And that, to me, says it all. I'm like, there it is. There's the missing piece that Warner Brothers and DC figured out long before Disney and Marvel got to it. And
on the other end of that, you know, my husband goes to all these things with me too, and I'm way more into most of them than he is. But, you know, in the car, I was surprised because I was like, he's going to be like he usually is, which is like, yeah, that's pretty good. You know, I like this part, or I didn't like this part. But he really, really, really liked it. And it really surprised me. I was not expecting such a reaction from him. I think he said he liked it better than Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, which I was shocked about. So I think that says something, too.
Bold statement, because I will say this. It's a tough year for me to pick which of the superhero movies thus far has been my favorite, because there's not a bad one yet.
Nope.
They've all hit. They've all been hits. And Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, I said it before and I'll say it again, it's better than the first one to me.
Yep.
I love that movie. And it's just absolutely fantastic. It's like all the emotional resonance that I looked for in the first one that I felt like I didn't get, I got it in Volume 2. Soundtrack's better in Volume 1 than Volume 2, but that's the only thing for me that Volume 1 has over 2 is that the music was better.
I agree with that.
But the acting, the characters, the cinematography, and just the ability of James Gunn to make almost fully CGI sets feel like they're real. That is something. That is tremendous. But I digress. We're talking about Wonder Woman here. Guardians of the Galaxy Vol. 2 is a whole other discussion. But that just goes to show you, we like Marvel movies here too. I love that.
Yeah,
movie.
Kelly.
Kelly likes Marvel movies?
Yeah, I mean, we do. I do. I just don't like, you know, some of the stuff that I've read and I probably shouldn't read. But, you know, the Marvel fanboys that just love to shit on DC, like, oh, they can't do anything. And plus, I've got a few friends up north that, I mean, praise everything Marvel does and everything DC does is garbage, and it's
that's why
I just said the whole, you know, suck it Marvel when I walked out.
Oh, you know, Kelly, like, that it ain't all just the friends up north. You know, you got some right around you that do that shit too. But actually, I feel like we got some friends around us who just shit on all these movies because they feel like they got to complain about everything.
No, that's true.
But the folks online, largely they're just trolling. Like, a lot of that is just like trolls. They may not even believe the shit they say. It's just to see if they can get under people's skin. I don't engage with those people. I gave up on that a long time ago. But like I said, the only thing that bothers me is whenever I see somebody will post up a story, and sometimes they'll even put it in the headline. They'll call it rumor, colon, and then whatever. And it's like, okay, well, you're telling people up front that this is not verifiable fact. Okay, fair enough. But then you'll read the story, and it's like, but you're talking about it like it is. Talking about it like it's absolute, and then that's going to get repeated over and over and over again until the lie becomes, or until the rumor becomes the truth, even if it never actually was true in the first place. And I feel like that's always an uphill battle for the studios and for people that just, you know, we want to go and enjoy these movies. But we do live in a day and age where, and I've seen this repeatedly from people where they'll say that they're going to wait and see a movie when it comes out to like Netflix or Hulu or Amazon or wherever, instead of going to the theater to see it because, well, theater ticket prices have kind of become outrageous. It's really expensive. So they're deciding whether or not they're going to go see these movies based on what certain people say about them and based on critical reviews. So all of those things matter, and it's just a good thing that Wonder Woman succeeded on both of those fronts. Like the word of mouth about Wonder Woman was strong immediately, and then when the critical reviews came back, and still to this day, the movie's been out for 3 weeks now, sitting at a 92% aggregate score on Rotten Tomatoes. That's
awesome.
That is 11 percentage points better than what Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is sitting at, and that puts it in the same conversation as The Dark Knight.
Yep.
So, and I still consider The Dark Knight to be the greatest comic book film ever made. But Wonder Woman's in the conversation. Wonder Woman is very much in the conversation. A top fiver for sure. Like, and it's amazing how much 2017 is morphing my top five comic book list, or my top five comic book movie list. Because Logan is right up there too. Dark Knight. Now I can put Wonder Woman on that list as well. It's like, man, everything has changed as a result of Logan and Wonder Woman. But speaking of surprises, let's talk a little bit about the cast of the live-action Wonder Woman movie. Not necessarily the main stars, but a member of the cast that maybe stuck out to you and maybe even stole the show a little bit. Jenny, I want to start with you on this one. Which cast member surprised you the most? Like, who stood out to you?
Well, he's a main cast member, but he stood out to me because, I mean, I'm not a huge Chris Pine fan. I like Chris Pine. I liked him in Star Trek. Mm-hmm. I've liked him in most of the things that he's done, but he's not like Robert Downey Jr. level fangirling for me. So his performance in this, I was expecting something sort of dry, maybe, you know, kind of quippy, but really just a backdrop for Diana. But he brings so much humor and just sweetness and gentleness, and he has the same sort of qualities that she has, that it comes like from within him, and it's not something that he's phoning in. He truly did embody Steve Trevor for me, the way that he's been portrayed, especially in the comic books, Greg Rucka's run of him. I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't expecting to like him as much as I did. And although I didn't cry at the end, I still was like, but I wanted him to be in the sequel. You know,
make it your wish. He signed for multiple movies.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Well, yeah, there's...
Well, it's comic books, nobody ever dies, so...
Nope.
That's fine. That's death, fine with me.
Death is a revolving door, as any comic book fan knows. Kelly, any member of the cast really stick out to you or surprise you in a way that maybe you didn't expect?
I think two stand out to me. Of course, Sir Patrick and Charlie both stood out. You know,
Sir Patrick played by David Thewlis, and Charlie played by Ewan Bremner.
You know, I mean, out of basically, you know, the little version of like the Blackhawks, or how, you know, that they were kind of, you know, hinting at, you know, this special team that Steve had worked with, obviously, before. History with, you know, Charlie just kind of stood out. And, you know, the fact that, you know, you think at one point, like, he's talking real big about, you know, being a sniper and da 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 da, and turns out he's damaged from the war. And, you know, the fact that he sings, though, and that, you know, when they're talking and Dinah says, "Who will sing for us, Charlie?" And it just, like, everything Gail said, the way she speaks is just, it's good on the ears. You know, she just, she's like you were saying, there's a genuine just quality of just goodness that kind of just exudes. And you know, that scene, like I said, those two just mainly because Sir Patrick, I mean, was it Danny Houston who played Ludendorff? I mean, it's like a big red herring that, you know, I was like, oh, well, this, you know, obviously he's Ares. No, I mean, he's not, but, you know, he shows up, Sir Patrick shows up, and, oh, he's Ares? Really? That's,
yeah, that was
wow.
That was a nice swerve. I enjoyed
that. That was. I was completely taken off guard when he shows up and he starts talking to Diana, and you start putting all of those things together, and you're like, wow, he's Ares. That was okay.
I will go ahead and say this. I was sitting, and Greg can confirm this, I was sitting right beside him when Sir Patrick first appears on screen, and whenever he's talking with Steve and Diana afterwards. I looked over at Greg, and I was like, he's totally Ares.
Mm-hmm.
I said it in the theater. Greg can confirm that one. And when it happened, I was like, yep, that totally makes sense, because Ludendorff being Ares was just too obvious. I was like, they're not going to telegraph it that far. But there are a couple of other performers that really stuck out to me that I didn't talk enough about in my review, and that would be Connie Nielsen and Robin Wright. As Hippolyta and Antiope, respectively. I wanted to see more of those two. I hate that we didn't get enough. We didn't get very much time with either of them on the Themyscira.
Was Robin White in The Princess Bride?
Yes.
Yes.
That's
Princess Buttercup.
That's it. I kept thinking to myself the whole time. I was like, I've seen her somewhere. I've seen her in some movie, a movie I really like. And that was it. It just dawned on me.
Yeah, it's
also, she was Jenny in Forrest Gump.
Yes, she was. Robin Wright was in Forrest Gump, and she is also tremendous on Netflix's House of Cards.
She is.
If you guys have not watched that, I highly recommend that show. She is just she gives a tour de force performance. But anyway, yes, Robin Wright and Connie Nielsen have great chemistry together, and it felt like there's genuine history between them in the movie. And I want to see more of that. And from what I understand now, they're both in Justice League. And they're going to they're going to be taking part in a flashback sequence that is likely going to have them, like, before Diana is even born. It's going to hopefully be them leading the Amazons against the armies of Apocalypse, like taking on Steppenwolf, or maybe even taking on Darkseid's forces and Parademons. I'm looking forward to seeing that. Like, Amazons killing Parademons, sold. and one other performer that really stole just about every scene he was in was the character of Samir, played by, I'm going to butcher this guy's name, but I'm going to say it's Saeed Tamawi, I think is how you say his name. I don't know how you pronounce his name. Somebody can correct me on that. But the character of Samir is just brilliantly done, and even gives this great commentary about how there are people fighting in this war, like pretty much everybody fighting in the war is something other than a soldier. Mm-hmm. His speech about how he wanted to be an actor, but he was the wrong color. And I was like, and that's a great commentary on the world as it stood at that time. Just like Charlie's situation when he's suffering from PTSD, they handled that really well and showed like the horrible effects of war and just that point in society or that point in our history had on everybody, on people of color, on folks who've been on the front lines fighting their whole lives and seen just too much like violence and death. It's an amazingly balanced film. Touching on some subjects that you don't expect it to. But a movie is only as good as it can tell its story visually. So there's something that while Wonder Woman does have its own flavor visually, you can tell that Patty Jenkins has her own style. There is something that they still had to do. They had to create a story in a film that fits into a larger world, because the DCEU was established using films like Man of Steel and Batman v Superman, and to a lesser extent Suicide Squad, but that's another subject. so visually, do you guys think Patty Jenkins captured a world that felt like it also fit in with Man of Steel and Batman v Superman? Kelly, I want to start with you on that one. Kelly disappeared.
Sorry, I had my mic muted. Yeah, it does. I mean, I think that it fits in perfectly with Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman, and it does a good job being in that lineup of connecting films and DC setting up their movie universe. So I think it works.
And Jenny, what are your thoughts on the visual style of Wonder Woman?
Well, you know, it opens as in modern times, and basically the whole movie is like a flashback because she's thinking about it as she's looking at the photograph. So I think there's a lot of room to play with that. Obviously, Themyscira looks different than anything that we've ever seen on any of these other movies, but in a gorgeous way. I mean, you couldn't do it any other way for that setting. But when you get to war and you get to London and it's grimier and it's dirtier and it's darker, then that, you know, that starts getting you in that same quote unquote Zack Snyder feeling. But I think it meshes. I mean, it's its own thing, but yet it also fits in, if that makes any sense. And, you know, I think she did a great job.
Yeah, it does have its own flavor, for sure. Like, it's a, especially in those Themyscira scenes, it feels like it's different from anything that we've seen in the DC Extended Universe film so far.
And frankly, we all asked for that, did we not?
We did.
I mean, we all just said, give me some more color. We all said, you know, make it brighter, make it, you know, happier.
that is something. I think the brighter and shinier colors, like the color palette certainly does make a difference in these movies, because the hero characters, they do need to pop in a way. Mm-hmm. And I don't have an issue with Zack Snyder using that filter, using that that color palette for his movies, but I do think that it should not be mandated across the entire DC Extended Universe. Like, no, not every director should be told, hey, you have to use this. I think they should be able to use their own color palettes. Like, you're using the same, you know, cast of characters, and you're hopefully going to keep a good bit of consistency that way. But each director should be able to craft their own visual style. And I think Patty Jenkins did that very successfully. Her action sequences were refreshing in a lot of ways. It felt different from what we had seen for the most part throughout a lot of other superhero movies. I mean, I'm hard pressed to think of one that nailed the action sequences quite this good or quite this well. And I think the several scenes where she's taking on, you know, soldiers in hand-to-hand combat, it reminded me a good bit of that warehouse. It was like a whole bunch of those warehouse scenes that you get in Batman v Superman, when Batman's taking out a whole bunch of armed thugs. It was like that, but amped up with a more kick-ass soundtrack, because that Wonder Woman theme is just badass.
So badass.
And I was really impressed with how well they worked that into the movie, because Junkie XL didn't do any of the music for this movie, but he wrote that theme. And Patty Jenkins got together with the person that did the score for Wonder Woman, and they made it work. Like, they found a way to incorporate it pretty seamlessly, honestly. Like, it fits in beautifully where they place it. And the good thing is that they don't overuse it. You know, that's a danger of having a good theme, is that sometimes people can, I guess, overdo it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like the composer, which was Rupert Gregson-Williams, did a really good job of incorporating that, but mostly sticking to his score, sticking to how he heard the music of Wonder Woman play out. And it's a pretty emotional score. It's one of the better ones from recent superhero movies, because that is one of the biggest criticisms that I think is very valid of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is their scores are pretty generic for the most part. Their background music and completely forgettable, with few exceptions. And if you don't think that's true, try to hum the Iron Man theme right now. Can't do it. Yep. Because you can't remember what it sounds like. But anyway, that brings us to, what was your favorite scene in the movie? Now, this should be a really good one. Jenny, what was your favorite scene in Wonder Woman?
Y'all know what my favorite scene was.
I think I do.
Y'all know it was No Man's Land. Holy shit. I'm like, I get chills just thinking about that scene. She comes up out of that trench, and it is just, I just grinned the entire time. It was gorgeous. She was so fierce, so badass, just doing what all these men had been so afraid to do for months. They're at the stalemate, and she hears about the terrible things that have been happening, and she's like, fuck that, I'm fitting to fix this, and just tears through. And as she gets to the other side of the field, she's like, okay, what's next? We fixing to take this village? Okay, let's do that. And then just continues to kick all of the ass with her and the way it was choreographed and the music and everything. It was, you heard me. I yelled when it was over with, because I was freaking out. It was awesome. the best scene in any superhero movie ever.
There was more than a little bit of a woo that echoed that echoed through the theater, and I was like, yep, that was definitely Jenny. Now, Kelly, I got to come over to you now. What was your favorite scene in Wonder Woman?
That's a tough one. I mean, I can't really compete with the No Man's Land. I mean, that to me is like where we get to see Diana just go, okay, she's been seeing all these things leading up to the trench, to No Man's Land. You know, she saw the little boy, she saw the horses, she saw the injured man. And finally she just said, enough's enough. You know, Steve was like, hey, we gotta go this way. She goes, nope, I'm going up this ladder and I'm going over there and I'm going to kick all of their asses and make them stop being stupid. But I think the one, you know, the scene where she goes in the building and she's just beating the shit out of all of those guys. And she literally knees this one guy through the window and keeps running that, you know, and when she's using the lasso and she's just whipping things around and she's, you know, it's like, how is she going to use the lasso? Well, there you go. We see it. It's not just used to make people, you know, tell the truth, but it's used to throw people around. And when she took out the top of that chapel, again, it was just like, damn, there's no more guys for her to beat up. Sad now.
It's like that scene. It's like that bit in the first Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie after they beat all the Foot Clan members in the sewer. The steam clears and Raph is like, oh, no more? And then a whole bunch of them show up and he's just like, oh, good. that's something that, I'm right there with you guys. That the No Man's Land sequence leading up to, and it's right back to back. That is just tremendous filmmaking. That right as you're finishing No Man's Land, which was this really intense scene, you're like, okay, we're getting a breather now. Hell no, you're not. She's going right over to that village and she's going to clear it. And she proceeds to do just that. And one of the, that might be the best action sequence this year. That two-part bit has got to be the best action scene we're going to see this year. If something is going to come along and top that, I don't know if my mind can take it because this that was just too freaking good. I mean, and we've seen some good action this year. The action scenes in Logan are freaking tremendous. Brutal as hell, but they're right on par. They're actually pretty close to on par, I would say, with the best of Wonder Woman's action scenes. And
yep, the prison sequence in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah,
I adore that, but still, it's Wonder Woman.
Yeah, that scene is just, it's hard not to cheer for it. Like when you see that, it's hard not to like want to just stand up and cheer. And that's kind of how I felt at the end of the movie too, when we see her in modern day Paris and she puts on the suit again, and it looks like she's gained the ability to fly, which I hope she has. I hope that's a thing, because I prefer her being able to fly. I don't ever want to see the invisible jet in these movies, but that's just my personal preference.
Yeah, agree.
I would rather her, like Superman, have the ability to fly. And you know, she jumps off the roof of that building. Looks like she's taking flight. She's going to go out there and, you know, be a superhero again. That was a stand up and cheer moment for me. That and the closing titles were done incredibly well. Loved every bit of that. So, hats off to Patty Jenkins, Gal Gadot, Jeff Johns, John Berg, and of course Alan Heinberg, who wrote the screenplay and is a former Wonder Woman comic book writer. You guys should definitely go check out his stuff. He did a really good job on that on his time on Wonder Woman, and of course Zack Snyder, who co-wrote the story for this movie. All of these people working together is what made it work. all the, like, there's only so much that any one of these people could have done, but you put them together and it's your own little Justice League right there. And I hope that all of these people are going to be involved in the sequel that, as we all know, after seeing the tremendous amount of money that Wonder Woman has made less than a month into its run, and it's crossing that, I think it's about to hit the $600 million mark worldwide.
Wow.
Worldwide. This movie is beyond a hit. It is a phenomenon. This is a cultural event. The movie...
As it should be.
The movie currently sits, according to BoxOfficeMojo.com, the movie currently sits at $573,495,580. That is not bad. That is an amazing haul.
How much did it cost to make, though?
$150 million.
Oh, okay. Wow. The profit.
And as we all know, like according to folks last year, I'm using folks' metric from last year when they said that movies aren't successful until they've made double their production budget. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Wonder Woman is successful.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman passed $300 million a long time ago. And by this coming up weekend, it's very likely that Wonder Woman will pass $300 million domestically.
Wow.
Sitting in the U.S. alone, Wonder Woman has made $275 million, over $275 million as of June 18th, as of yesterday. So as this movie progresses, there is a good chance that it could wind up making more money in the U.S. than Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. It has already outgrossed, and as far as its 17-day total, it has already overtaken Man of Steel. It has made more money faster than Man of Steel did. And there's a solid chance that Wonder Woman will make more money worldwide than Man of Steel did. And Man of Steel's record, of course, is $668 million worldwide.
Wow.
in its entire theatrical run. Wonder Woman is going to surpass that. And I think it's only like a matter of like maybe a week or two before it does it. So, folks, Wonder Woman's more popular than Superman right now. That is a tremendous thing that has happened, and it's not on the. It is not. I think this is one of the most important things. It is not on the strength of the male comic book fan audience that this has happened. This is because Warner Brothers and DC figured out that the audience for Wonder Woman is women and young girls. Appeal, like make a movie that women and young girls want to see. They will go see it and they will be supportive big time. That's it. That's the secret. It's not difficult, and yet it is. I think it's difficult for like a bunch of dude, like old guys sitting around a table to figure out what women want to see.
Mm-hmm.
I think mm-hmm. When you put that group of people together and say, make movies that women and young girls want to see, I think you're just dooming yourself for failure.
Why don't you just focus on making a good movie?
Yeah, like focus on – that's the other part of it. That's the other side of the coin, Jenny. I'm glad you brought that up. Just make a good movie. Make something that people want to see.
Yeah.
I'm not going to fault Zack Snyder for trying to make something very like artistic with Batman v Superman, which is what I think he was really going for. But maybe this was the wrong platform to do it. Maybe using Batman and Superman as your like super artistic expression movie was not the right approach. I'm not saying the movie's bad. It's not bad at all, from my perspective, at least as far as the Ultimate Edition is concerned. But it's probably not what either of those characters really needed right now. especially if you're trying to get into that big interconnected superhero universe idea.
I've been watching superhero movies for forever, but I think that something that I've learned in my comic book reading is that a one person is many things. Like, I love Batman v Superman, and it's different for me. It touches different parts that I love than Wonder Woman does, and that's okay. Like, you can make many different types of movies, and they will still appeal to me, and I will still go to the movie. So it's not, you know, you don't want to get formulaic, and you don't want to, you don't want to dumb down your audience. You know, you don't want to, I would say give the audience a little bit of, you know, the benefit of the doubt for being able to handle and understand different movies and still go to the theater to see them for different reasons.
Oh, absolutely. Variety is the spice of life. And even when it comes to, and that's the secret of longevity of superhero movies. I've seen some comments recently from some people who have said that they hope superhero movies come to an end because they're tired of keeping up with all the continuity of, like, multiple films. And I'm thinking, well, that's not necessarily true, because you'll probably still go see Star Wars no matter how many of those they make.
Yeah, that's true.
And you still have to keep up with the continuity of that.
And it's not like it's fucking difficult,
no,
and it's entertaining.
Really not. It's really not difficult. It's really not hard. But the secret to longevity for these superhero movies is going to be that they all can fit into different genres. Like, the superhero genre does not need to be a thing. These movies need to, yes, they are about superheroes, but they need to be like a spy espionage movie that just happens to be or just happens to star a superhero like Captain America, the Winter Soldier, or, you know, a coming of age superhero movie like what Spider-Man Homecoming looks like. It looks like a John Hughes movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it feels. And that's going to play very differently to a completely different audience than what like the last few Captain America movies have played for.
But is it really that big of a difference in your audience, though?
No, because the Marvel films are pretty much universally praised. But then you get something like Wonder Woman. It's a period piece. It's a pretty well done one at that. Like where Captain America, the First Avenger, it's also a period piece because it takes place during World War II. But it's less about the time period in that movie than it is about the aesthetic of that time period. Like, they wanted the look, but they don't really delve into a lot of the politics and a lot of the thinking and reasoning behind why the war was happening in the first place. And that's something that I felt Wonder Woman did better. Wonder Woman actually captured the feel and the – not just the look, but like the feel, the tone, the culture of the time period that it takes place in, which puts it leagues above Captain America the First Avenger in terms of doing period pieces.
Mm.
So that's another genre you can do. I think that the next step for somebody in these superhero movies is they need to do a romantic comedy that just happens to have a superhero movie that just happens to be about superheroes. That has been tried before, not by comic book movies, but if people remember the horrible film My Super Ex-Girlfriend, that I believe starred Uma Thurman.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that one.
It's a pretty terrible movie.
Yeah. Or like,
it's bad.
Or like Catwoman, because because Catwoman had that same sort of vibe to it.
Was that a romantic comedy? I just thought it was a train wreck.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I was thinking like Ant-Man and the Wasp would be a good opportunity to do a romantic buddy comedy that just happens to be, you know, a superhero movie too.
Well, Paul Rudd could totally pull that off.
He's done it before.
Like, yeah,
he's done great romantic comedies.
Yeah.
You know, and some that are kind of unexpected. Like, I consider I Love You Man to be a romantic comedy.
Yes, I do too. Romances count.
Yeah, it does. I consider that to be a good example of his ability to do that, and it's a fantastic film.
I love that movie.
But before we go further off the rails in talking about our favorite romantic comedies, which we could do an entire podcast on that one. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Forgetting Sarah Marshall is the best one ever.
Yep.
What do you guys want out of the inevitable Wonder Woman sequel? We already know that it's likely to take place in modern day, but could maybe incorporate some flashbacks, which is what I kind of hope for. Because I really want to see Diana, traveling the world in like the 1970s. I just want to see it. I want to see Wonder Woman like really putting some like male chauvinist asshole in his place in the 1970s. Part of me is just like digging on that, you know, and it would be a nice homage to the 1970s TV show too. So that's my little contribution there. Kelly, let's start with you on this one. What do you hope we see in that that Wonder Woman sequel?
Have they talked about? I thought they hadn't really said yay or nay on a sequel yet. But you think they're going to do one?
Oh, with this amount of money.
Money, yeah.
Yeah, that's happening. The talk now is just that they're in the negotiation process with Patty Jenkins because somebody was stupid and didn't sign her to a multi-picture deal. But
yeah.
But now,
yeah, that person's probably fired.
I can on the one hand I can understand why they didn't. On the other hand, I'm like, man, you guys really should have just signed her to a multi-picture deal.
On the other hand, she's fitting to get a real good deal.
Oh, she's fitting to get a raise.
She wants back up the money truck.
Her and Gal Gadot both.
I think as far as what I would like to see in a sequel, you know, I think if anything, I would like to see a little bit more maybe some God interaction, you know, and maybe some more mythic kind of, kind of a mythic kind of story. I don't know. I just think that lends better to Wonder Woman than a typical, okay, well, you know, some cheesy villain or villainess or whatever. I mean, you know.
Yeah, we don't need to see that. We need a better developed villain in the sequel.
Yeah, I mean, I would think that if you're going to do something like that, that you would, you know, you'd want to do something in that area. But at this rate, you know, like I said, I whatever they do, I mean, I'll definitely go see it. But I think it would be something that they would really – you want to sit down and put a lot of thought into it because this is a sequel and, you know, they always kind of tend to do a little less than the first film as far as, you know, things go. But you know, there's always the exception to the rule where the sequel is just as good or if not better than the first film. And I'd like to see that happen. But that I think really would just, again, putting in a good story and doing – you know, doing things, like I said earlier, doing things their way. You know, I used to say, and I had to take this back, that if DC would just follow the Marvel formula. Well, you know what? The Marvel formula is all well and good, but it's getting old. It's getting old. And it, you know, you can almost predict how a Marvel film is going to pace, how it's going to go, and it's entertaining, but I mean, you've kind of like, okay, well, I know what your tricks are. You haven't, you know, with the exception to the Guardians films and like the other standouts like Ant-Man and Doctor Strange and some of those that are these characters that aren't the norm, you know, they kind of have their own, you know, setting and stuff. I just think that DC needs to find their own path and I'm fine with them not putting shit at the end of the movie. You know, there were so many people like, well, why didn't they put something at, well, that's, they don't have to do that. You know, I mean, we've gotten spoiled by Marvel. I mean, it's just not, you know.
And if people were honest with themselves about those post-credit scenes, I think they'd realize that those are aimed squarely at people who know their comic book lore and not the general audience. Because tell you how many people, the first time I went to see Avengers and you get that Thanos scene at the end, I had a lot of people ask me, who was the purple guy at the end? I'm like, yep, there it is. Like, they don't know who that is because these post-credit scenes are totally not aimed at people who are just in the general audience who don't know anything about these characters coming into the movie. Even the one at the end of Doctor Strange when you see Mordo obviously turn heel, which all of us knew that was coming because Mordo is Doctor Strange's greatest enemy. But everybody else was probably like, well, you know, that was genuinely shocking. The rest of us are sitting there like, nah, I kind of saw the, him stabbing Benjamin Bratt coming. Right, we knew that was going to be a thing. Howard the Duck at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy. Did anybody other than comic book nerds get that?
No, I mean those. you're right. The post credit scenes are for the comic book fans. That's Marvel's way of a little wink and a nod to the comic book fans in the audience, and that's fine. That's all well and good. But DC doesn't have to do that. I mean,
they do it during the movie. Like you see winks and nods during the movie, and Marvel does it too. Like Marvel throws in like these great winks and nods throughout all of their films. The post credit stuff is honestly it's starting to get a little out of hand because while I enjoyed all of the post-credit scenes in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, there were five of them. I mean, let's – I think we're starting to go a little off the rails there. We need to rein this back in. Like, it's fine to have – like, you want to put one post-credit scene or I think better, put it in the mid-credits like they started to do. Like, there are several of their movies now that do a mid-credit scene that seems to mean more to the plot of these films going forward. And then they'll put a little funny stinger at the end that you don't necessarily have to stay for. It doesn't really mean anything. I think it's – I mean, that is a Marvel signature. So, yeah, let Marvel have their thing. Let them do that. But you're right, Kelly. Having DC do the same thing in their movies is just like, come on. Y'all would just scream that they're copying Marvel if they did
that. It's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I'd rather them not do it just to kind of be their own, you know, set up their own kind of way of doing their films.
You know what? Suicide Squad has a post-credit scene, and you know what? Suicide Squad was terrible.
Well, Suicide Squad was terrible on so many other levels. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the whole, I went back and tried to you know, pull something good out of the film, and I only could pull out the fact that, oh, there was an end. Oh, the ending. Oh, that's great. It's done.
It's over. Awesome.
Oh, it's over. I can leave.
I watched the extended cut of that movie and it doesn't get any better.
I really just want to know what the DC execs were thinking. It was like, we need to put out the Suicide Squad film.
I'm good with them doing that. Like, given that it was an older Batman, I'm totally fine with the idea of having a Suicide Squad film to introduce a bunch of like Batman villains all at once.
That's what I thought that this was sort of going to be like, but it was just an
abomination, is what it was. It was like you want to introduce magic into this world, fine. Suicide Squad, not your movie. It should have been a very grounded take, and it should have like. Boy, we're going to go down the rabbit hole on this one if we keep going, because I got a whole list of problems I have with Suicide Squad.
Well, let's save that for let's give that its own little platform
on a future episode of The Miss and the Maligned. Kelly and I will sit through the extended cut of Suicide Squad. You have been promised, people. It's going to happen because we suffer for our art and we suffer for you. So don't forget that we're going to do it. And hold us accountable. If it doesn't happen within a year, start messaging us about why y'all hadn't done Suicide Squad yet. Okay. Mm. We'll get to it. But anyway, we've talked about what we want out of the sequel. Jenny, what do you want out of a Wonder Woman sequel? We got to get this one back on track.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, it's kind of the same answer that I had for the animated movie, honestly, because Greg Rucka's run of the comic book has just made me love Cheetah so much. But I think that we could do an origin story for Barbara Ann that has a sort of Raiders of the Lost Ark kind of feel to it, because she's an archaeologist of some sort. And, you know, you could maybe set it in the 80s if you wanted to. And then maybe bring in Veronica Kale and have that sort of same dichotomy that they had in the comic book.
You know what? I don't hate it. I don't, right? I don't hate it. I kind of dig it.
Because you could, I mean, to me, it hits all the marks. I mean, you could pay some great homages, especially if you put it like in the 80s, and then you could, you know, have your Cheetah origin, and then you could set up Veronica Kale going forward.
And, you know, there's some potential in that idea. I like the idea. Like, I know that they're going to wind up putting it in modern day, like post Justice League.
Yeah.
So that's definitely going to happen. But I like the idea of them doing what, you know, doing something similar to what Arrow does, and having us some flashbacks to that era. And if not the 80s, 70s, to pay homage to Linda Carter.
There you go.
And set up like her friendship with Barbara Ann Minerva. I feel like we should see that as a thing. Like, that should be something that can parallel her modern day stuff. Like, she tried to help Barbara Ann. Maybe there was a period of time when Diana really got homesick for Themyscira and wanted to go home. And she was tired of these people. And in the efforts that her friend Barbara Ann Minerva, you know, tried to help her get home and also find Themyscira, she winds up, you know, cursed as the Cheetah.
Right.
And that would be a really good story to tell. I would love to see that.
And get that Liam Sharp design to her. Perfection.
All day. That is a tremendous Cheetah design, and should absolutely inform any live action version of the character. And I could also see, like, Veronica Kale being like a parallel to Barbara Ann Minerva. Like, Barbara Ann was her friend back then, tried to help her get home. Now Veronica Kale's like, I want to help you find Themyscira. And Diana's like, the last time that I did that, I kind of sacrificed a friend accidentally. But so I'm going to advise you not to do this. That could be something. I mean, there's a lot to that. That could also make it very much like how Captain America films flow. Like, you give it a little bit more of a Raiders feel, because I really like that idea, the Raiders of the Lost Ark thing. But you also create a kind of Winter Soldier type deal.
Right.
Which, there's an idea in there. There is definitely something to that. I like where you're going with that, Jenny. And that kind of brings us to the end of this episode, and of course to Wonder Woman month here at Place to Be Nation Pop. We hope you guys have enjoyed all of this month of our celebrating all things Diana and our look into her world. Hopefully it's going to encourage you to go get you some Wonder Woman comics, as we've certainly suggested quite a few. And we'd also love to hear your thoughts on the 2009 Wonder Woman animated film, and we'd love to know what you guys thought of the live-action Wonder Woman movie. You can absolutely tell us that. You can tweet it to us on Twitter, or you can join our Place to Be Nation comics group on Facebook. We take anyone and everyone. We love having conversations with all of our listeners about all of the stuff that we've talked about. So come into the group, talk to us, tell us your thoughts on these things. We'd love to have you. But if you want to tell us your thoughts on Twitter, you're going to have to find us individually. Now, Jenny, tell the folks where they can find you.
I am at Jenny Cruz, C-R-U-Z, 2814. And then, you know, my podcast, Geek and Sassy, is at Geek and Sassy.
Yes. And speaking of that, what have you two girls got cooking up? What's coming up?
Well, the last episode that we did, we talked about some of the canceled TV shows, because there was a slew of them at the end of the season that got canceled, and we talked about some that maybe should have been canceled and weren't. Maybe some of the ones that we got mad about that did get canceled. And then in probably a couple of weeks, we'll my lovely, wonderful co-host Miranda's a little bit behind on her CW TV shows. So we will have some analysis of all of the finales of all the TV shows, because there was so much to talk about. And then after that, who knows? You never know with us.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to all of that, because I love me some Geek and Sassy. I listen to every episode. I was right there with you guys on a lot of the shows that that got canceled, and even a few that probably should have been. Unfortunately, Gotham and Riverdale were left off the list of shows that should have been canceled. And you know what? If Miranda would spend less time watching those two shows and more time watching the good stuff on CW, maybe she wouldn't be so behind. And you could actually get some episodes done on a schedule. So just remember, all of you folks out there at home, and especially you, Miranda, it's hashtag Gotham sucks.
He said it, I didn't.
And you can add to it hashtag Riverdale blows.
I love you, Miranda.
I actually did finally, well, it was because one of my roommates sat down and he basically, you know, watched the entire season of Riverdale. And I, because I was sitting out here on my computer, I got to watch it as well. And
Kelly got the secondhand Riverdale.
Yeah, I mean, I see what they were going for, but really didn't. It's just a big, I don't know. Yeah.
Kelly pulled
it's the, not for me.
Kelly did the Seinfeld gif.
Yeah.
Out.
Out.
and that's what I did after one episode of it. I was like, yep, that's all it took. But anyway, and if you guys are looking for us on Twitter to send us angry messages about how much you love Gotham, because we're going to get that too, you can find me at Russell_Sellers, and you can find Kelly at HKP2814. Send us all your Gotham hate. We take it in stride. We are just never going to like that show. It's terrible. But with that, we have... on our next episode, we're going to be going into July, of course, so that means we are going to be taking a look at our top and bottom comic book events. That's right, our favorite event stories, and then our not-so-favorite event stories. There are plenty of each, and we will likely each have different lists when it comes to that. And then, of course, later on in July, it's time for another quarterly. That's right. We've reached the halfway point of the year. It's time to look back at the first half of 2017 in comics and film. And we're, of course, going to have some other special guests onto the show to talk about all that. And we'll be announcing that a little bit later on the next show. So you can also, speaking of halfway in the year, the glorious Happy Awards are coming up. Very, very soon. Now, you guys are definitely going to want to tune into the Hard Traveling Fanboys for that one. Me and Jenny had quite a bit of fun participating in the Happy Awards again this year. It's an annual thing. It's something that we very much enjoy. And I think that the people are going to be pleasantly entertained throughout.
They're going to be something.
They're going to be
There's going to be some emotions had one way or the other.
There certainly will be.
Quite frankly.
It's not for us to say.
It's not for us to say.
There's also another thing that's in the works that the Hard Traveling Fanboys have teased that Janie and I are also both part of. That I'm not going to spoil what it is. I'm going to let them announce what their show, what's coming up. But, folks, yep. Y'all ain't ready for this.
Yeah,
y'all are not ready for what we've done.
It defies explanation.
It really does. But I can't, I'm excited for the trailer to come out, Jenny. I'm very excited.
Oh, yeah,
for
that. No.
And I cannot wait. It's going to be something truly special. But you guys tune into some Hard Traveling Fanboys for more info on that one. And, of course, go listen to some Geek and Sassy, all you TV nerds out there.
Yeah.
You know you want to listen to it. And I do believe that I'm going to be guesting on that show sometime in the near future. And I will willingly participate in their final segment.
Yes.
I'll try to have a better answer this time than I had the last time I did it. And you guys can just laugh at me as I attempt to name the nerd eye candy of the moment. Dear God, why do I agree to this? Why did I agree to this? It's fun. It's all in good fun, folks. We love it. And of course, there are plenty of other good Place to Be Nation pop comic book podcasts for you guys to listen to. Todd Weber and Tim Capel have finally given us the next chapter in their panel-by-panel look back at the Claremont and Byrne X-Men run over on Conversation Comics. You guys need to go check that out. I just absorb every episode of that. It's actually more fun than going back and reading the old Uncanny X-Men. Or read it alongside it. It's great commentary. You will laugh your ass off. They just got to the issue where Dazzler was introduced, and ooh, oh, it's something special. It's good stuff. Go listen to that. And of course, all of the great podcasts that you can find on Place to Be Nation and Place to Be Nation Pop. And with that, folks, thank you for joining us. We will see you guys the next time. Glorious. No, I-